Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Paul Skeens.
You're just going to take you a long time, you think?
Well, no, I'm just trying to see. It's not the cleanest looking thing. He has not. It looks like in 2025, by their metrics, he has maybe touched 100 once or twice.
But do they have his average fastball velocity? So, like, on average, what his four-seam fastball was in 2024 versus what it's been so far in 2025. They don't have that?
I'm looking for it, and I don't see it right here out in the open, Chalooch.
Donnie, do you have what Ryan Dempster said? So, immediately on MLB Network, the game ended, and they go to their afternoon show, and they're reacting to this game, and the question was, what are your impressions of Paul Skeens through the first month of the season? Dempster pitched for the Cubs against the Pirates for all those years. He's got a quirky personality, does a great Harry Carey impression, actually. And he's on there talking about what he's thought of, what he thinks of Skeens through seven starts this year. Let's hear it.
Yeah, hey, this is going to happen. This is the evolution of starting pitchers and when you come into the league. Like, we saw him last year. He was throwing 100, up to 101, 102. I mean, he was throwing gas all the time. And then that velocity starts to tick down. The grind of pitching every fifth day, the wear and tear that you go through. I just think it's inevitable that you're going to have outings like this. He can't be perfect every time. We're so used to him going out there and just being like, punchy, 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 but it doesn't happen sometimes. And, you know, this is funny. He goes five innings today. He gives up three runs, and that's it. And yet, that's a bad outing for Paul Skeens. That's the bar at which he set. Like, that's what we expect, is him to dominate. But it's just not going to happen every team. You run into a good hitting offense like the Cubs. They're going to give you tough at-bats. They're going to grind you. They walk four times. They strike out only twice. And then he didn't have his number one stuff today, and they made him pay for it.
I don't think he had anywhere close to his number one stuff. That sounds to me like a guy who just looked at he's on TV. There's a bunch of games on. He sounded to me like a guy that just looked at the box score and the stat line and said, hey, you know,
he didn't
a
have
broken clock is right twice a day, so you can have a start
guys,
where an elite pitcher looks pretty substandard.
At one point, he'd thrown 29 balls and 25 strikes. Baseball Savant has it. They have his four-seam velocity,
yep,
which is what we want. 2024, his four-seam velocity on average was 98.8, league average 94.7, so he was a full 4 miles above that.
Uh-huh.
It's down 0.8 to even 98, and league average has ticked down.
Is that considered a big drop?
I mean, I would not say a big drop. If it was down like 2 miles an hour to like 96.5, I think that's it. Here's something else we have not mentioned one time, but I'm glad I finally got my nerd hat on again and started reading these pages right. This was something people were writing about him this year as one big difference. His arm angle is 3 degrees down from what it was last year. His arm angle was at 23 degrees on average last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's at 20 this year. He has been, and this it clicked in when I saw it on the page. It has absolutely been referenced by like national baseball shows.
Why would he do that?
He is throwing from a lower arm slot.
Is that like a durability longevity thing?
I don't know. So he's up here last year. I'm pantomiming this only for you, Pony, and about down to here. So the arm slot is closer to He was already a three-quarters pitcher. He was never like an Aaron Harang throwing it straight up and over
you
the top.
You know else came right over the top back in the day? Remember Josh Cole Mentor?
I do remember Cole Mentor. Didn't Chris Young, the big Princeton
guy? Yeah, he did.
From 6'10", he's thrown 88-mile-an-hour cheese.
That's why he was deceptively fast because he came. John Roush used to do that, too, as a big man.
Aaron Harang always looked to me like one of the Bond villains who gets shot early in, like, Tomorrow Never Dies, but I'll show you that one during the break. But, yeah, so the arm angle's down closer to sidearm by 3 degrees. I'd say that's the biggest change. Here's why I don't think the velocity is an issue right now. His splitter, or what you'd call two-seamer, basically, they kind of classify it as one and the same here on Baseball Savant Pony.
Yep.
That velocity's up a slight tick for him. So I don't think his arm's getting tired. He's throwing his two-seamer.
Well, that's why I didn't agree with what Dempster said about the rigors of pitching every fifth day. They don't ask him to pitch every fifth day. They've set up extra days sometimes, like the Tommy Harrington start in Tampa where they just threw an extra arm in there to give him a day of rest to keep him away from five in a row. The only time he's done that this year was that start against the Guardians where he went seven innings and gave up two runs. They had an off day from his last start on Friday, so he got the extra day's rest. One time this year has he had to, like, learn, quote-unquote, how to pitch every fifth day. We do have Skeen's reaction here, him talking after the game. Now, I've noticed, like, the St. Louis game, even the opening day start where he was just kind of okay, he has not been hard on himself in these Q&As afterwards. I don't know. You know, this is obviously an alpha male and a guy with, you know, huge self-belief and confidence in himself. So I've detected that. I don't know if that's because, like, you never want to, like, show any sign of second-guessing yourself or questioning yourself or not thinking you're that great. But this was, I thought, his worst start. So let's see if afterwards, after today's game, if Paul, you know, had some harsh words to describe the way he pitched.
Paul, how would you assess those five innings from you today?
Yeah, just execution wasn't there. Kind of spraying the ball, so got away with it there for a while, and then obviously shut up a little bit in the fifth, but it is what it is.
Paul, what did you make of the three homers in the fifth? Two, I think, were on splinkers. The other one was a fastball. Just what did you make of those three pitches, those three homers?
Good pieces of hitting. I don't know. I probably missed my spot, but yeah, good for them.
Donnie, you said after the game it looked like you were laboring a little bit out there. Were you a little tired in the fourth or fifth at all?
I mean, I wasn't super sharp today.
Paul, is that something that you noticed coming out of bullpen pregame, or is it not until you get into the flow of the work that you notice that maybe you're not quite as sharp as usual?
A little bit of both. Bullpen was a little all over the place, and then went out in the game, it was a little all over the place.
Did they do anything to wear you down?
Yeah, I mean, they fouled off some good pitches, hit some good pitches. They just got to execute better.
When you get into a struggle like that, what adjustments do you feel you have to make to try and get the train back on track?
Execute my pitches. That's the biggest one. Yeah, I mean, I saw him yesterday. It was good to see him.
For the first four innings, it looks like you were able to get out of a couple of jams, getting that double play in the third inning. Was there anything that you were trying to rely upon when to get out of those jams?
Just executing my pitches. We turned a good double play, and then everything, you know, circles back to execution.
Well, I know this is the first time you've seen them this year, but you've seen them semi-frequently since you've been called up. I mean, have you noticed them attacking you any differently, you know, than they did maybe the first couple times you saw them a year ago?
Yeah, I think it changes a little bit each time they came out swinging today. Didn't really change throughout the game. Just got to a few pitches.
All right, that's from Sportsnet Pittsburgh, Paul Skeens afterwards. You could tell he's mad at himself with some of those answers. And when he's talking about how he was, you could tell that when he got asked the question about was he tired or not, he didn't want to answer. Did not want to say yes. Did not want to agree with what Donnie Kelly said afterwards. But he did admit that even in his bullpen, he did not think he had his best stuff today. And this is not a good lineup to go into
without
a game with
best.
That because they lead the league in.
Slight point of order. I was looking at the wrong year. His two-seam velocity, as we talked about that, is down like 0.2 mph, but I still think the arm stuff is more interesting about arm angle. I'll give him one start where he gets tattooed like this, relatively speaking, where they hit, I think it's three balls out of the park. If it's like a walk here, a single, somebody grounds a double.
Yeah, this was not death by a thousand paper cuts. They hit him.
That's what I mean.
It wasn't bad luck. He got hit. It wasn't seeing eye signals. He got hit hard.
Two walks, they move the runner over, and somebody lines a softly hit double over first base.
There were no dying quails. These were legitimate home runs.
They hit three rockets
into the seats. Yep.
Although I saw, I guess on the broadcast, they thought if O'Neill Cruz had gotten a better jump on the first of the three home runs, he might have been able to come back from over the wall and bring it from over the wall. I know the guy's hitting great. I'm not going to put that one on him.
What do you think of the theory that he doesn't have that veteran catcher anymore? I mean, Grandal couldn't hit to save his life, but he pitched to Grandal all last year. Now he wants to pitch to Davis and not Bart. So when he pitches, Bart's out of the lineup, and Brownie came on and said, well, that's the guy he's comfortable with, so you give Paul the guy he's comfortable with.
I'm not giving him an out there. I think he's so advanced at 22 years old in terms of his mental approach. I don't think he needs a veteran security blanket catcher.
Yeah.
I don't. The way he talks about pitching, I'm not willing to give him that out. He talks about pitching almost the way, if you can get him going on it and being expansive.
Oh, he's extremely analytical.
The way like Greg Maddux would talk about
it. I agree with
it.
That. That's why I think he is going to be the greatest pitcher of all time or close to it, because he combines the power of those great pitchers and the minds of the guys that relied on their control and outfoxing hitters to succeed. He was great last year, and at times this year too, of making adjustments in games.
Well, the cat and mouse game has begun now because he got hit, so now it's time to make adjustments.
But I think he was incapable of making those adjustments today because he couldn't throw strikes where he wanted.
Well, that's where the bottom line is. You can have all the mental acuity you want, but the game is still a physical game. The act of pitching is still a physical act. And I'm gonna zero out here, and maybe people disagree with me, and that's fine. They can say so. But I think he just had an off day. And because the team is now 12 and freaking 20, we are probably predisposed to get nervous about any
little
thing.
But he's had more off days than we thought he would by this point in the season, right?
I'm going to give him the grace of it's April. I expect May and the rest of the months to be a hell of a lot better, this start notwithstanding, obviously.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment. All so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Sleep.
Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Jason Mackey joins us now. Jason pitched in high school and college, so I'm excited to get his perspective. Jason, this was Paul Skenes' worst start as far as I was concerned. He's given up more runs, but this is the worst I've seen him look in a game. What's your take on the Pirates' immortal, all-time great pitcher and some of the struggles we've seen from him this year?
He's a human being, Andrew. I'm not worried about it. I mean, I've seen some of the best in baseball just have bad games. I don't think this has even been a bad stretch for Paul. I think that's unfair. You know, he came into this.
Oh, so your expectation was for him to have the 27th best ERA in baseball this year?
No, it was not, most certainly. Okay. But you're asking me to, like, sound alarm bells, like I think there's something wrong with
No, Paul. I'm not. I mean, I think there's something in between that we can maybe get into in a nuanced way, but that's okay if you don't want to.
Come on now. Come on.
You don't think there's any in between?
No, I do think there's in between. You know me. I'm always into nuance, for crying out loud.
It didn't sound like you were when you said, basically, let's drop the subject because he's a great pitcher and he'll be great.
I didn't think it was – like, I thought it was one bad game. I guess from my perspective –
I don't think he – I guess I'll say back, I don't think he's had just one bad game this year.
Okay.
He gave up five against St. Louis and six? How about opening day against Miami?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a gigantic problem. I guess I'm coming at it from hearing a lot of social media that there's like something gigantic wrong with Paul Skenes, and that's what's coloring my opinion on it. And I don't think there's something gigantic wrong with Paul Skenes. I thought his command was below average today. His fastball velocity's been a tick down. I don't think he's dealing with arm problems. I don't think he suddenly forgot how to pitch. I think it's just been a little bit more inconsistent or not quite as dominant. I think it's you know, a cat and mouse game, people adjusting to him and hitting some mistakes. Some of the pitches that he left up today that got hit for homers, he's not going to be able to get away with those. Nobody's going to be able to get away with those. I don't think it's a gigantic problem. I think it's all still inside, and I think he's still figuring out a little bit of who he still is. So I mean, I understand the concern. I understand what you're saying about some of these outings have not been, you know, typical. I'm pushing back against the idea that, like, there's something wrong with Paul Skenes. I don't think there's anything wrong with him. And that, maybe you're not saying that. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it.
Jason, he has stated a desire multiple times, I think, when asked to that he wants to go deeper into games and therefore be more efficient. To what degree do you think the Pirates are even trying to influence him in any direction about his development versus them just saying, you are a generational prospect when we drafted you. We're going to let you decide how you want to proceed with your career and how you want to be like developing as a pitcher. How hands-on right. or off are they?
They're fairly hands-off, Chris. I mean, they're not telling him, like, you need to pitch this way. You need to pitch that way. They let him work out and do his own stuff. By and large, like, they do not meddle. This is a different scenario than 13, 14, 15. Like, one of the things I saw on social media, somebody saying something that, like, he's fallen victim to a pitch-to-contact philosophy. And he's not. They're not telling him how to pitch. Yeah, he's not executed some pitches as well as he would like. I mean, they don't tell him what to do between his starts. They don't tell him what sort of philosophy to operate with. I mean, if you want to look at, do they have a quick hook with him? I mean, maybe. I could kind of quibble with that, but he just threw, what, 109 pitches his last time out. Like, that's pretty good. It's pretty
his interim manager today said he looked tired in the fifth inning.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that. I don't think he looked great today. So, I mean, Donnie made the call. I don't have any problem with that, but I mean.
Oh, I didn't have any problem with him taking him out there either. I mean, he didn't have it today.
No, I agree. I don't think he had a very good day. I think he'd be the first one to say that. But,
all right. Yeah. So among the things that have changed from Paul Skenes, Rookie of the Year and Cy Young finalist to this year, just this is not anecdotal. These are facts. His arm slot, Chris brought up, is different. His velocity, fastball velocity, is down, and he's throwing more pitches. So do you see, like, would you question any of those things through seven starts?
No, I wouldn't. I'd let him be him. We didn't see Paul Skenes for the first, you know, seven starts last year. He was in Indianapolis. I don't have a good enough read on if he's one of these guys that, you know, takes a little while to warm up to things. I mean, Brian Reynolds is kind of that guy. Like, he's been a notorious slow starter. If you're giving me 32 starts of information that his velocity is down, I suppose that's something to react to. I think one of the things that Paul is trying to do this year, and maybe you can criticize this, I'm not going to, but he's trying to be more of a pitcher and less of a thrower. He's trying to experiment with different pitches. I think that's a little bit of where his arm slot is. I think he's trying to be available for the entire season and not just, you know, go bonkers and throw 101. I think he's more worried about the nuance of pitching. Has that caught up to him a little bit? Maybe. I think he's probably trying to, you know, maybe outsmart himself a little bit, and sometimes it's just the best thing to do is reach back and go with power.
Do you think he misses a veteran catcher like a Grandal?
I think he might, yeah. Yeah, I think Paul is. I do. I'm not saying that Henry can't get there, but I do think Paul's one of those guys that is more, how do I say this, more receptive to a catcher who can kind of guide him, say things, get, you know.
How much guidance does he really need, though? When you hear him talk about, like, his mental approach and, like, the analytical approach to pitching and breaking down the competition, I think he sounds like a baby Greg Maddux for, like, that level. He's already doing 400-level work. I'm not going to give him the out, Jason, that he might be better off with a veteran catcher, because I don't know how much one of those guys really has to teach him on the fly.
No, and it's not teaching him, Chris. Sometimes it's telling him to get out of his own head. Sometimes it's telling him, like, look, we don't have to outsmart guys. You can throw 100 if you want to. Just reach back and grab that.
Well, then it sounds like somebody like Derek Shelton or somebody there needs to say, hey, Paul, we love that you want to be more of a pitcher, less of a thrower. Sometimes being a thrower is good, though.
Hey, Chris, I totally agree with that, man. I have no problem with that. That's the same
version.
He hasn't
thrown a pitch that's 100 miles per hour yet this year.
I know.
That's crazy.
I know, and I don't think it's arm damage. I don't think he's, like, you know, has something physically wrong with him. I think it's what we're talking about. I think he's trying to maybe be a little bit too cute.
And why, if you is wanna, the, Jason, why is the arm slot 3 degrees lower on average? Like, that's been written about. It's not me just seeing that on Baseball Savant and making note of it to Andrew. There have been things written about him having a even more down from three quarters delivery. What advantages would there be to that that you know of?
That he's going to get more run with what he's throwing. And it's probably, I mean, this is one area that I think the Pirates might have an impact. It depends on how things tunnel. When you throw pitches, like, he's probably dropping his arm slot because he's working on a cutter and a slider and they come out of the same arm slot. You want him to tunnel and look the same. So if he's up high with his arm slot, but he drops down to throw a pitch that's moving like to his glove side, right to left, that's probably why he's going to drop it, because he's trying to get it in that same arm slot. Is that the right idea? I mean, should you just say screw it and fire a ball from 100 over top? I'd argue yes. I think that's enough of a competitive advantage, but they are very big into tunneling and getting things to come out of the same arm slot. If you're throwing a pitch with glove side break, you probably are dropping your arm slot a little bit.
Last four hitters in the Pirates' batting order today trying to beat a first-place team at home: Canario, Frazier, Triolo, Davis. How is it that in year six of a rebuild, half of your lineup is made up of hitters like that, Jason?
Because they don't have a deep enough roster, Andrew. And I was looking into this for something I'm going to write about Sunday. Think about all of the young guys that they've brought in here via trade and whatever. You know, I came up with a list of like 22 of them, young guys who have had an opportunity to develop in the Pirates system. They've had a negative wins above replacement, according to Baseball Reference. And what they haven't been able to do, they've done a pretty good job with pitching. They haven't been able to get young hitters in here and get them to mature. And the fact that you have Alexander Canario and then Manuel Valdez who hit cleanup, I don't understand that. You know, that is a systemic failure with, you know, bringing in Leover Peguero or Jack Sawinski or any of these, Henry Davis even. Like, they're either the wrong picks or you didn't develop them, or you're not getting the most out of them, maybe all of the above in a lot of the cases. I mean, it should not happen, you know. And even when you go out and sign a guy, Tommy Pham, for instance, you're not getting enough out of those picks. And that's been a consistent criticism of this group. You know, you bring in Rowdy Tellez or Yasmani Grandal or somebody who you're hoping to add some offense, and they're not doing it. Michael A. Taylor would also fall into that category. Like, they just have not been able to get enough out of hitters, whether they draft them, whether they trade for them, whether they otherwise sign them. And so you're left with a bottom four that looks like that, and it looks like a lot of the lineups that we've seen this season where there's just not enough punch top to bottom.
Jason Mackey, read him in the Post-Gazette. Listen to him on The Fan. He'll be in with the morning show from 9 to 10 tomorrow. Thank you, Jason.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Follow us on Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. I got a little bit feisty at the beginning there.
Well, I mean, it needed to. You guys were having a real, like, protracted battle, a 20-pitch at bat.
One of the things that drives me nuts, not just in sports talk radio discourse, but in just general conversation, and this is not me criticizing Jason, because I think a lot of people do this. When you say, I don't think it's a gigantic problem, we're not debating if it's a gigantic problem. We're debating, is it a problem? Like, there's different sizes of issue or problem. And to, like,
so
say,
you think he's blunting the question by saying, no, it's not a huge problem, when that's not what you asked?
Like,
you think he's, like, avoiding the answer?
Yeah, like, no one's taking it all the way to the extreme where we're saying that, like, he might just be a pedestrian pitcher.
Well, that one guy on Twitter kind of did.
Okay, well then take it up with him. Tweet him back. Don't fight a proxy war against Runny Diarrhea 69 with me.
No, Runny Diarrhea didn't tweet this one.
What did Runny Diarrhea 69?
Remember, he was the one that said, don't use the word masturbate on Twitter, because you were doing that to describe Tommy Pham's old roll of the dice.
Did Runny Diarrhea 69 offer an apology? And what happened there? Didn't you call him out for it?
I called him out for it, and people were, I think it got a big pop.
People loved it.
Yeah.
People loved that you put Runny Diarrhea 69
like
in his place.
They just like reading Runny Diarrhea 69, that name. People have four more minutes, by the way, to vote for TRT.
And it's competitive.
Do we have a close race.
The Fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates want to visit your teams in action for our youth baseball and softball showcase presented by Sheets. Parents and coaches, send an email to us at youthsports@937thefan.com to register your 12 and under team. And the Fan may make a stop to your field. Details at 937thefan.com, brought to you by Keystone Custom Apparel. All right, time for TRT. Total Request Thursday. We give you some topic ideas. We throw them out there. You get to choose what we talk about at 5:30 every Thursday. 16% saw the news that a Rangers reporter is saying that Mike Sullivan is on the verge of becoming Rangers coach. And the Penguins have been left high and dry, still looking to find their lead man behind the bench. 16% said, let's hear you guys talk about that in Total Request Thursday.
That's out of 666 votes by my count, the mark of the beast. Bechtold's got a vote to make sure we get off that number.
22% said, let's get into a giant topic some more. We discuss it every year around this time. We do big ratings because of it. Fans love the draft. Steelers draft review, 22%. 30% enthralled by the 100 men versus one gorilla debate. Great topic. But coming in first place, 32% said we want to hear the PM team talk about the Buccos blowing again. Yeah. I'm a little bit surprised by the results here.
You thought the gorilla was...
I thought draft, and I thought gorillas... I thought that was going to be the neck-and-neck race.
Gorilla and Pirates really went down to the wire. I mean, I thought we could have some fun with the gorilla talk today, but this is a democratic process that we allow our listeners to engage in.
Yep.
I would never subvert the democratic process. Buccos with another dispiriting series loss. Pony, let's dive right back in.
So I got a text here about Skeens' scuffles. All right. His ERA right now is still in the top 30, but he's not near the top of the league. His strikeout numbers are down. He's had some amazing starts like the one in LA on Friday, but he's had an equal number of clunkers like the one today. This was the worst one, though. So this was brought to my attention. Chris Sale won last year's Cy Young. He beat out Skeens. In March and April, he gave up 13 runs and then was great from there on out. Gave up two in all of May, three in September. I mean, the guy.
So he had a bad start to the season.
Bad start to the year. Skeens has the same number. He gave up 10 in March and April, and then you add three today. So that's 13 in his first seven starts. That's the same exact number that Sale had last year.
So there's hope.
I'm just saying. I don't think we need to, like, start saying prayers yet and things like that.
Part of the reason when Paul Skeens has a subpar start and they lose a series that you didn't maybe chalk up as a win because of it, but thought they had a very good chance to win because of him. Part of the reason that we're, like, reacting the way we are is his starts just take on an added importance and get added attention. But also, like, there's nobody else other than O'Neill Cruz pulling their weight. If Paul Skeens isn't winning damn near every start, and they're 3-4 in his seven starts, team win-loss record,
right,
then, man, if you think this is bad at 12-20, it's only going to get worse if he starts losing starts with regularity.
So, look, the first month of the season can lie to you. It's not the end-all, be-all. We know that, right?
Pirates went 19-9 in April 2 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, so you can say that. But I'm just going to be brutally honest here. I did not expect through the first month of the season that Andrew Heaney would have more good starts than Paul Skeens.
No, because that either would have meant Andrew Heaney was the single best pickup of the offseason by any team, or Paul Skeens was scuffling out of the gate, and it's the latter. Because Heaney just got bombed in his last start.
I will give you some Pirates stats for the first month of the season. And I want you to tell me, and Donnie, you too, if you feel like this guy is playing above or below your expectations for them coming into the year. Okay?
Yep.
So we got a month's worth of games now.
Okay.
Joey Bart. One homer, seven RBIs, .293 batting average, .811 OPS. Above or below?
It's impossible for me to say below with an .811 OPS as a catcher, but he is underperforming my power expectations for him. I thought he'd be a guy that would give them decent pop and be not like a 30 home run guy, but maybe could hit 20 given what he did last year. So I have to say he's overperforming, but in the one very specific area, hitting the ball over the fence, vastly underperforming.
Donnie?
Yeah, I'm going to say over, because beyond the home runs, he's been one of their best offensive players. And I thought it was fair to question, because I certainly did, how would he follow up what he did in 2024? Because there was reason to think, you know, is this guy going to be as good offensively? Besides the home run number, he is.
He's walked 13 times, so his on-base percentage is the highest on the team. Well, so I got to definitely say thumbs up.
The hitting eye, like the approach and everything else at the plate is very, it's obviously, it's real. Like, it's legitimate.
All right. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. No homers, 7 RBIs, 280 batting average, 663 OPS.
I'm going to say underperforming, but here's the caveat I'm going to throw at you. This is the player he generally was offensively, with the exception of last year.
So why would you say underperforming then?
He's just performing.
Yes, but I'm forcing you to put him in one.
Because he's been completely not noticeable.
Man, you are dead on, though, in your assessment of him. His career OPS is 664, and he's right at 663. He's playing like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Here's why I'll go thumbs down, though. And this is actually more on the Pirates than him. They've shoehorned him into only playing shortstop. They've boxed him in there.
They've taken what was his best attribute, defensive versatility, the thing that like made Josh Harrison so valuable to them, and stripped him of it.
Right. So I'm going to go slightly below, but not by very much. Done?
He's more of an indictment on the team, by the way, that they traded for him, and he was having a career offensive year, and look how excited we are. And, well, this is actually what you got.
Yeah, so I wanted to clarify, we're grading both sides here, not just offensively.
Yeah.
Okay.
Complete player.
Yeah, because offensively, I'm actually happy with what he's doing. They have him down in the order, but he is one of their more consistent hitters. Defensively, a little bit worse than I thought, but also, like you guys just said, they've pigeonholed him into just playing short, where he's, you know, that's not his strongest spot.
Key Brian Hayes, 236 average, 600 OPS, 1 homer, 13 ribbies.
Underperforming. I'm sorry. I have to have more expectations than that of him.
I don't even think he's been like an extraordinary defensive player this year. I think he's been good.
He made a couple errors very early in the season that I feel, or like misplays.
I don't
even know if they count.
I don't know.
Errors.
Like the defensive metrics are hard, like defensive WAR and
zone rating
and things like that. But my eyes tell me he's not been Scott Rowland over there this year, Brooks Robinson.
He's a complete void offensively. He really is. We saw the absolute apex of his career in the COVID year right out of the chute, offensively. And by extension, we probably saw the apex of his career, period.
So he's basically on pace here for 6 home runs and
what about 75 runs batted in?
Yeah, I mean, that's not bad.
But that's more a byproduct of if people are getting on base in front of you. It really wouldn't like call to mind the idea that he's like this big time offensive player and run producer. It's like an Alan Craig in 2013 season.
He's got more RBIs than Andrew McCutchen right now.